He's right in front of me, and I can honestly tell him that I'm going to knock him spark out. Leaping right hand by the Prince. Ooh. And a hard left. And Kelly's down for the third time.
Whoa! He's for real. The Prince is for real.
One more touch to go. And Carnivale's gone. Baron is the champion of the world. Baron is the champion of the world.
Hello and welcome to Off The Brawl on Off The Ball after another packed weekend of boxing action at home and abroad. With me to chat through all of the headlines are Phil Egan and Simon Maguire. Lads, how are we doing? Any particular highlight from the weekend, Phil?
The 11th round for the Lomachenko fight, because it was strange watching him struggle, but Pedraza deserves great credit, but just the 11th round. Then, so the 10th round was quite tough for him, and then he just came out in the 11th round and it was just class. If you could only watch one round of the weekend, that would be the round to watch.
Totally agree. We'll get into that later on. And Simon, are you still keeping your emotions in check after HBO's big bye-bye at the weekend?
It wasn't really much of a big bye-bye, was it? I think the big bye-bye was when they announced they were going to stop. That was it, really. It kind of like petered out pretty tragically there at the weekend.
Grand. Well, we might get into HBO towards the end of today's show. We'll also build up to Canelo Fielding this weekend, a card which, of course, features our own Katie Taylor. She puts her belt on the line once again, this time on the hollowed stage of Madison Square Garden. It was there that Vasyl Lomachenko had his latest outing at lightweight on Saturday, the Ukrainian lighting up the little room at the famed New York venue. We'll also hear from Loma's mandatory challenger Anthony Crolla as he gears up for the toughest acid test in boxing. Anthony was, of course, in attendance at Ray Moylett's fight on Friday night, and it's with those events in Castlebar that we start today.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're joined here by Mayo's favourite son, Ray Moylett. Ray, I know it's a bitter pill to swallow here tonight, Ray, but these fans came out here and they showed their will and you showed your heart in the ring. What's your thoughts on tonight, Ray?
I just want to thank everyone for the massive support. That was unbelievable. I was out on my feet in the fifth round. And I didn't want to get up, but hearing your voice threw me off the floor. I couldn't stay down with everyone that was here, so thank you so much for that. You know, I apologize to everyone. I didn't, you know, this is a signature now of Mayo at this stage. You know, I just missed out on the final hurl, so I apologize to everyone. I didn't bring the belt, but considering...
Ray, I don't think you owe anybody in here tonight an apology. You showed your heart, and me as a fighter, and there's a lot of fighters out there as well, we know how hard it is inside this ring and through the ropes. You showed your heart here tonight, Ray, and I'm sure everyone in here is absolutely proud of you, and I am as well, Ray, as a friend, 100%.
You know, I had a tough couple of months and coming back and walking into this arena and have everyone here for me to come up from where I came from. I already won before that we started this fight at all. Being here with everyone is here. So I didn't bring back the belt, but I'm a winner in here tonight, and I've done this for us all. So thank you very much for all the support. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, one more time, put your hands together for Ray Moylett.
There you have it, Ray Moylett, who came up just short after a valiant effort against Christian Arrascaeta in Castlebar. Before we get into the specifics of the fight itself, lads, it's worth just crediting everyone involved for what was a great occasion. Probably a long time since Irish boxing had a night like that.
Yeah, it was great to see it. Obviously 2,000 people there, but I was watching it on the box on Friday, and it just looked like everyone was having a good time. And just to have even the commentary team that they had for TG Carr, like, you know, some, like, the likes of Ryan Burnett, obviously Jason Quigley, we just heard there, in the ring looking sharp in his suit, like, you know. Usually he's not that well-dressed in the ring, but, you know, just, I thought they did it really well, and looking forward to more of the same in the new year.
Yeah. Jason Quigley trying to put Irish media out of business here with his, he's trying to conquer all worlds at this stage, Simon.
Yeah, well, he dressed for the occasion, like, and unlike us, you know. But yeah, no, I think everyone involved in the promotion, at the deserves huge credit. It was great to see it back, and there's a buzz about Irish boxing again, and hopefully we can kick on now in the new year.
Yeah, it won't be long before Jason's headline in the card over here himself, hopefully. In terms of the fight itself, it's a well-worn cliche that you learn more in defeat than victory sometimes, and it felt very much the case for Ray. Like, he came through a lot of adversity in that fight, and probably all the better for it, would you say?
Yeah, like, obviously the fifth round is the turning point, but he was having a tough time up until that. He was taking way too many body shots, and if he didn't get up after the fifth round, you know, you wouldn't have thought much different of him. But then the way he continued on, you thought a lot different of him after. You thought, like, the guy is an absolute warrior. We knew he was a warrior anyway. We talked about it before the fight, that he has that kind of style where it's going to be entertaining. And he didn't, like, okay, the result wasn't what he was looking for, but I think he could have walked out of that theatre in Castlebar on Friday night with his head held high.
Yeah, and it was remarkable heart, Simon. Like, he could easily have fought a cab driver in that fight and no one would have been any the wiser, really. But he took on the toughest possible opponent at that level and gave a good account of himself. Like, it's just hard to know what his prospects here. Do you think a rematch is in the offing, or where do you think he goes from here?
Well, first off, like, anyone who, just to echo what Phil is saying there, anyone who kind of stepped into the ring as a warrior, but when you face something like that, and I thought he was gone. The second time he was down, it looked like he just didn't have it. And he struggled through to the bell, and he came back, and he started boxing brilliantly, you know. And he deserves so much credit for seeing it the whole way through. And I had him 2 points down going into the last, you know, and I gave him the last just about. But, like, he really put a show on for everyone there, and he can certainly go out with his head held high. And I'm looking forward to seeing him again. I don't know if an immediate rematch is the way to go. I think he might have struggled making the weight. I mean, Crada said it, you know, he could have done with a fight at that weight before taking on Urs Kreda. And maybe another cut down there, because he did look a bit weak, and it's quite possible that tactically your man went for the body, knowing that he was struggling to make the weight and capitalised because of that. But this could be a great springboard for Ray. I mean, look at all the attention he got across the media here. It was a huge success. Everyone enjoyed themselves. That's what, you know, going as a fan is all about. I don't think an immediate rematch. I think maybe, as Crowley said, maybe 6 months' time.
Yeah, and that's a kind of style, Phil, that he's likely to come across as he progresses through the pro ranks, that sort of style that Urs Kreda brought to the table. Are there any adjustments in particular you think he should make in that fight, if it's a rematch or similar style?
Yeah, well, if it seems that the weight was an issue, and then, you know, if you're eating body shots, like, some of them were lethal in the first couple of rounds, and yeah. Ryan Burnett actually said it in the commentary, referred to it as money in the bank for Urs Kreda later in the fight, and, you know, he didn't have to wait much longer. So it'd be interesting if Ray Moylett was to sit down with Paddy Collins and assess the performance and see what they could do differently if they were fighting. If they had the fight all over again this weekend, what would they do differently? You just wonder, like, we know Mexicans, like, the old cliche, they're tough. Like, so did Urs Kreda realise after, you know, a few blows with Moylett that his power wasn't going to trouble him? So yeah, he was quite happy. And that's something that could be an issue if, like, four finishes Ray Moylett has out of 12 fights. Like, that means that, you know, in the pro ranks, he's really going to have to work for wins, and he's going to have to improve his all-round boxing then.
Yeah, and the nature of his style means he kind of draws his opponent's momentum onto them, try to use that against them. That's how he scores his knockouts, generally speaking. The weight probably was an issue. It's his first cut to 135 in a long time, and the nature of the body shots would suggest that's very much the case. But he did have a bit of a second win in the second half of the fight, which leads you to believe, you know, it's not curtains in that respect. He could still forge a career at that weight. So maybe he just has to take stock and just see where he's at going forward. And then the nature of the fight itself in Castlebar and all that comes with that, the hometown pressure.
Yeah.
Like, we remember Lewis Ritson a couple of weeks ago seemed to be overawed slightly by the occasion, trying to impress the hometown crowd, maybe fall outside of style a little bit. Do you think that was a factor? Was he trying too hard?
I don't think so. I just think he was fighting a very good man in there, and it was a challenge that he probably felt he was ready for. And maybe if they're honest, himself and Packy, if they're honest with themselves, maybe he wasn't ready for it. But, you know, they could tell you they were ready for it, and it was just, it wasn't executed the way they had spoken about it. But yeah, I wonder, even like the entrance, you know, like the pipe band, they love a pipe band out west.
Yeah.
And everyone was there to see him. And I just wonder, maybe he seemed to be waiting a long time to get into the ring. And I just wonder, as he's waiting, is it just kind of hitting home that, you know, they're all here for you. There is pressure on you. But, you know, they certainly weren't when he lost. Like, they were, you know, everyone was still on Ray Moyle's side. So he didn't let anyone down. But you want to put on a good show. Because also as well, not even the pressure of fighting in Castlebar, but what it meant for Irish boxing. That, you know, we're getting a card in outside Belfast, and it was on terrestrial television as well.
Yeah, totally. That point, exactly, because it wasn't just the people in the arena, Simon, it was the whole Irish boxing was the weight was on his shoulders, and it was something he relished when he was in here. He was saying he was looking forward to putting Irish boxing back on the map. And even in defeat, I think he's revitalised. He's tapped into something in the Irish market. There were people who, my friends, who wouldn't necessarily be into boxing that were all tuned into that fight. And just because he lost didn't necessarily dissuade them from tuning in again. You know, they're Ray Moylett fans now, Irish boxing fans again. So, you know, it could be the start of something.
I think it's a rebirth. You know, we've been in the doldrums for quite some time now. What did Andy Lee say? Irish boxing was in the gutter a couple of months back. And this is, you know, kind of put the spotlight back on the sport in a very positive way. It was a great card from the start to the end. TG Carr did a great job. And I think credit to everyone involved. And the main event was brilliant. It was a brilliant fight, you know. Two knockdowns, he's out, he gets back up, he comes back. It's there in the last round, it's in the balance. And he just couldn't get over the line, you know. And I just really enjoyed the whole event, and I'm looking forward to it. Something similar again, February, March, April next year.
Yeah, and credit to TG Carr, we've mentioned it already, but, you know, they really went full board on this. They didn't half-ass it in any way. They had a brilliant presentation team, brilliant commentary team, and it was just a great showcase for the sport, and credit to them, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. So more of the same. Like, you know, when you have, you know, boxers on the panel that have won titles, you know, in amateur and pro ranks, like, so they did their, you know, it covered pretty much everything, like, and I said, if that's the approach that they're going to use going into the next event, like, they're onto a winner.
Yeah, and Spike pulled a bit of a Paulie Malignaggi fought and then pulled on the commentator's microphone as well. What did you think of his commentary performance?
Yeah, he was good, yeah. I'd say he was frustrated after his performance. He didn't do much wrong. Like, the guy that he was fighting, Gorbix, is, like, he's durable, you know. And he did take some decent shots, but he just wouldn't go down.
Mm.
So I'd say Spike was just happy to get another outing before the end of the year, because he'd put so much into the Lemieux fight and it was over after a round. So he put in such hard work into the training camp that this was his chance, and, you know, he came down a weight. And, you know, Spike is always going to get, you know, people are always going to be interested in putting Spike into matchups, because even if he's fighting lads at a higher level, the promoters are going to think, yeah, but Spike can challenge these guys, and, you know, he'll probably get a world title shot in the new year, I'm sure, at some stage.
Yeah, and even at 154, there's domestic clashes to be had in Britain as well, so there's still a monetary value in Spike O'Sullivan. He's a big name, he's fought on big UK shows before, so the future's bright for him. One other notable attendee at the fight was former lightweight champion of the world, Anthony Crolla. He was there to support sparring partner and friend Ray Moylett. And delighted to say we caught up with Anthony earlier on. Anthony, thanks a million for taking the call.
No worries. Thanks for having us, mate.
Anthony, we'll get to your own plans shortly, but I know you were in attendance at the Ray Moylett fight on Friday night. What did you think of Mayo?
Yes. Oh, listen, I love the place. People are lovely. I just think there are lovely people in here. I certainly love to be back there again, and Yeah, really enjoyed it, and the atmosphere, show you was there, was fantastic. I didn't get the result I was hoping for Ray, but he done himself very proud. Headlined a bill back at County Mayo. Atmosphere was unreal, and he can come again. He can come again. He lost to a good opponent in a great fight.
Yeah, and I know you boxed in Dublin a few years ago. Would you have spent much time in Ireland before?
To be honest, I've only ever been like you, Dublin, around Dublin. So it's my first time in the west of Ireland, but I really enjoyed it. So I'm definitely going to get back. Sligo, obviously County Mayo.
Yeah.
And just around there, like, I see friends, you have family around there, so it's fresh to get over. But no, I love the place, genuinely did.
Good stuff. And in terms of the Ray Moylett link-up itself, how did that come about initially, Anthony?
Well, it was Ray was over, and he was getting bits of sparring in over in Manchester, around England, really. Someone mentioned it. And so he come to the gym, we've done some rounds, and Joe fought, and I fought it as well. Stylistically, he had some traits of my last opponent, so we said to Ray, you know, if we're in touch, we'd bring you over for sparring, pay to bring you over, and that's where it went from, and obviously become good mates with him since. He's a great lad, Ray. I think anyone who knows Ray, it's hard not to like him, and that's where it's gone from. For straight away, I was like, you know, I'm going to get out there to watch him. Ray looks after us, and everyone did the open motions, everyone looks after us, so I can't thank them enough or speak highly of them enough. But like I say, it's a good excuse to get back because the show was packed out there Friday night, so there's no reason, a great venue as well, why there can't be more boxing there.
Yeah, and in terms of the sparring, what was the sparring like, Anthony? Was it competitive?
Great sparring, obviously with Ray. He was a little bit heavier when we were sparring. He says to me, I might be after, man. You've seen him over in Manchester, he'd lost the weight, and it was Ray's first time in making that weight in a number of years, and I know a lot of people were talking about that. I mean, ideally, he would have had a fight at that weight before such a tough one on Friday, but sometimes with the opportunity, that, you know, that happens. I do believe Ray's a lightweight, and he'll, like I said, he lost to a good opponent, and there wasn't a lot in it. He can come back with experience, and I still believe Ray Moylett's just one to see. He's got a very bright future, and he's got a great team behind him, and the support of his hometown. He can definitely go on.
And I know you had a couple of setbacks earlier in your career, and you came back and
of course
came on strong and won world titles. What would your advice be to Ray at this stage in his career in terms of moving forward?
Listen, I had setbacks at a much lower level than what Ray did at, you know, at an early stage, and probably an early stage, by this time I'd probably had a few defeats at a lower level than what Ray, you know, got defeated at on Friday night. It's for me, and hopefully now, and I believe it is a little bit, the emphasis on keeping that all in boxing has gone a little bit, and I said to him, you know, texting this today, it's, you know, rest up, spend some time with a wife, friends, family, a few weeks, and then get back on it on the new year. And that's believe what he's got to do, you know, get back on that horse. That's what Ray's very talented. You saw what he's done as an amateur. It was a hard fight on a Friday night, but he's not been in wars as a professional fighter where he's put serious miles on the clock. So, you know, he lives well. Get him back in the gym straight away in the new year, and then look for a date in March, get him out. One or two fights, and that's a rematch there. Maybe not in March. I'm sure Ray won't have a problem with it. But that's a rematch there later in the summer or later in the year. Another big night in County Mayo.
Yeah, and it was a tough fight on Friday, and you're about a month on now from a tough fight of your own with Dodd Yardan. You must have been delighted to come away with the win after a tough battle like that.
Yeah. I was really pleased. Great opponent, Dal Jordan. He's been at world level for a number of years, and you mentioned before the sparring with Ray. It come in really handy. And Ray said, since he's seen us, me and Joe Gallagher, he said the fight went exactly how you said, and it did. It did. So although it was a tough fight, and I had to work, I won most rounds, but I had to work hard in each and every round to do that. I mean, new, and I think Dal Jordan is still coming at me now as the bell hadn't gone. He was so determined. Yeah. But I just believe my better boxing brain and punch variation was the difference on the night. And obviously that's a final eliminator, which sets me up nicely for a world title shot. So yeah, of course, I'm very pleased.
Yeah, and that was obviously another fight in front of a packed arena in Manchester, your hometown, and Ray spoke about the pressure he felt fighting in front of the Mayo fans. Is that something you enjoy? Do you relish fighting in front of your hometown? Do you enjoy that kind of pressure?
I think I do. I really do. It's a nice pressure to have. I always think, and I think most boxers will tell you this, you know, as a young kid, you're watching the boxing, you're going to the big shows, you dream of headlining them one day. So I always think, you know, when I do get a little bit nervous, I think, you know what, there's hundreds, thousands of boxers over the years who would love to be in your position headlining a show. And also, in a way, be thankful for it. Be thankful for it. There's nothing wrong with feeling those nerves and a bit of pressure, but you've got to be thankful for it as well. And you work hard for those nights as well. So you're in, if you're not, it comes with the territory. Do you know what I mean? You're gonna feel a bit of pressure, nerves, the weight of a nation, the weight of a city, you know, whatever it may be, on your shoulders. But I try and embrace it and be thankful, because I know boxing's a short career, but when those nights have gone, you'll miss them daily.
Mm. And that win last month sets you up for a fight with Lomachenko now, Anthony. Did you get a chance to watch his fight at the weekend?
Yes, I watched it, and listen, he's unbelievable to watch. Unbelievable fire against Pedraza, who for me is very, very good. For some reason, he's remembered for his other defeat to Gervonta Davis, where I believe he's a bit weak at the weight. I think he's a class fighter, and he's shown that by winning the world title, beating Ray Beltran last time out. And I thought he gave a great account of himself, Pedraza did. But yeah, listen, the fight with Lomachenko, hopefully it can happen sort of in the winter 20s, sort of spring 2019. And people, obviously, they have their opinions and stuff, and, you know, so be it, they're entitled to it. But it's a fight that I really hope happens, and I can't wait for it. I'm not stupid, I know how tough of a fight it would be, but it's a fight I'd love to have. And people might say, oh, is it just a payday? Listen, I'm not going to lie. The payday would be nice. It'd be a career-best payday. It'd make things a little bit easier for my family. But it's much more than just a big payday. So I go in there believing I can shock the world. And listen, I know how tough it'd be. I know I'll be up against it. But boxing can be a strange old sport at times. Styles make fights. And, you know, I can't wait for that fight if it's to happen. It's looking promising at the minute, but we'll just have to wait and see.
And you mentioned there Pedraza, like a top-class operator in his own right, and he gave Lomachenko a bit of trouble with that pressure, and it's proved that Lomachenko is human, you know, he can be got at. Have you already got an idea in mind in terms of how you'd go about that job, Anthony, if it does come around?
No, well, I've not sat down with Joe yet and think, right, this is how we're going to go about doing it. When I've been back in the gym, we've sort of been working on certain shots. So, you know, we know roughly what we're going to try and do. But, like you say, Pedraza had great success on Saturday at times. But then at the same time, Lomachenko's shown, we all know how versatile he is, so that there's nothing new there. But I think the hardest thing preparing for Lomachenko is the movement. And that's something he does unbelievably well. So, and we have to try and find an answer for that.
Yeah, and we mentioned there how much you love fighting in front of your hometowns or home fans in Manchester, and that would, needless to say, be another packed out arena at the Manchester Arena. Is it realistic that fight would take place in the UK, or is it more realistic that you'll go to the US?
I think it's probably slightly more realistic that it happened in the States. So it'd be a nice away day for everyone. I know some of my friends are happy with that, but wherever it may be, I know you saw the atmosphere, what happened in the arena. Obviously, his good friend Usyk last time at the arena, so I'm sure he wouldn't mind either way. But I think if the fight's to happen, it'd probably be more than likely over in the States. But we'll see. Like I say, no, I'm just ticking over. I know, obviously, he mentioned Mikey Garcia on Saturday, but Garcia's not fighting until the middle of March, so that's not going to happen until at least the summer. So obviously, I'm sort of waiting. I'm mandatory for the title. So I'll see what he's, when his team get back in touch, you know, what the next step for them will be. But I'll be ready whenever I get the call. I'll be ready for the fight.
Yeah, and he's obviously got a few different obligations in terms of mandatories, I think. Are you likely to fight again before that fight comes around, or are you just going to wait out?
Well, it depends. If it looks like, you know, we might fight summertime, then yeah, I'll fight before it.
Mm.
But I'm not sure. I should know a lot more in the next few weeks, sort of around Christmas time, and sort of take it from there, really, to be honest. But no, of course, if he's not going to fight till the summer, I don't think it'd make sense for me to just sit around and wait. But I don't know. We'll see. Somehow I'll sit down with my team and see which route we're going to go.
Yeah, great stuff, Anthony. Just a couple more quick points. I know big fight at the weekend between Canelo and Rocky Fielding. Are you giving Rocky much of a chance in that fight, or what would be your advice to him going into that fight?
It's a tough, tough fight. Probably people would see it similar as to what if I fought Lomachenko, maybe slightly more. So, it's going to be such a tough night. But one thing Rocky Fielding can do is punch. Yeah. I know that he certainly can punch. He's heavy-handed. But your only worry is then is Canelo took bombs off Triple G for 12 full rounds. So, listen, I think like sort of almost everyone over here, I'm going to be rooting for Rocky big time, but it is a tough, tough ask. A really tough ask. And he's got nothing to lose. He's got nothing to lose whatsoever in the fight. Again, he'll be getting well looked after. But it'll be a tough night. You've got to favour Canelo in a big way.
Yeah, and one last point, Anthony. I know there's another big battle on Sunday between Liverpool and Man United. Are you fancying United to do the job at Anfield?
Hey, I'd say I'm looking forward to going, but I'm not sure I am the way they're playing at the minute and the inconsistency of us. It's going to be tough again, but I always look forward to it. The atmosphere is always great. It's a real sort of passion. I think he's the biggest rival, without a doubt, in English football. So I look forward to being there, and not many things please more than coming away from Anfield with 3 points. But it'll be tough on Sunday. I'd take anything. So it'll be a point. Listen, I'd take Jose Park and the Button coming away with a point just to frustrate them. That's a sign of the times. But yeah, it's always good going Anfield, but coming away with a result there don't get much better.
Well, great stuff, Anthony. Thanks a million for taking the call, and hopefully
thanks for having us. Take care, and look forward to getting back over soon.
Brilliant. Chat to you then, Anthony. Thanks a million.
Take care, mate.
All the best.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Former lightweight champion of the world there, Anthony Crawley, one of the nicest men in boxing, and a great story as well for people who aren't familiar. We've done pieces with him before, just charting his backstory. A really great guy and a great champion. He's next in line for Vasily Lomachenko, as we mentioned there, the Ukrainian having ousted Pedraza at the weekend, a champion in his own right, but it was a trickier fight than most expected, but Lomachenko still came through with flying colours in the end.
Yeah, some people were critical of Lomachenko's performance, but I think Pedraza deserves great credit, because Lomachenko had said it in the build-up to the fight, this lad's style, I don't really like it. And he switched a few times. But easier said than done, to avoid getting hit from Lomachenko, you need good head movement, which Pedraza had. Even we've seen lads with good head movement still getting caught by him. But he just seemed to frustrate him. And he probably wasn't as busy in the first couple of rounds as, I can only remember him landing one notable punch in the first round, which probably won him the round. But I actually, watching it, I thought, this is actually a close enough fight. And then, obviously, the two knockdowns in the 11th, you're thinking, okay, there's definitely no doubt that he's going to win comfortably in points now. But it was close enough, up until that.
Yeah, it was the scorecards mightn't suggest it, but it was a close fight in the sense that each round was competitive and Pedraza pushed him. I felt it was more, as Phil touched on, a case of Pedraza being excellent on the night than Lomachenko being below par, possibly a confluence of the two. But it was a unified championship fight. These are two high-level operators, and I very much doubt any champion has gone into a fight as big an underdog as Pedraza did in that fight. So what did you make of it, Simon?
Yeah, just again to go on what Phil said, Pedraza was a very awkward style, and he mixed the stances up, and you could see a lot of foot stomping from the right lead leg of Lomachenko and the left lead leg of Pedraza, and then he'd swap over. But Lomachenko was always going to win the fight. Despite being a little bit off, he still went looking for the knockout the whole time. and I was sure he got it in the 11th. I think the ref was a little bit generous with the time, but sure, at the end of the day, Pedraza got up and finished the fight, so maybe the ref was right. But yeah, no, I mean, what can you say about Lomachenko? I'd have to question though whether his power is going to carry up if he goes up another weight class, because he's a relatively small, compact fighter.
Yeah.
And I think if Pedraza was a little bit smaller, he would have got him out of there. So you'd have to wonder if his punch power is the same against these bigger guys.
I just wonder if he goes up against bigger guys, though, he'd be too quick for them, and he'll almost force them into submission, which we've seen. Like, he retired what, 4 fighters in a row, where they're just like, I can't. This is just relentless. I can't deal with this. So, like, there's advantages if he does go up a weight, but I kind of get the impression he's not going to go up. He's going to stay at lightweight for a while,
yeah,
and establish himself there.
Well, there's 5 undefeated fighters in the top 6 or 7 up at junior welterweight, so there's plenty of challenges there for him. You know, from Josh Taylor, Jose Ramirez, Maurice Hooker, Ivan Baranchuk, and Regis Progress.
Mm.
So, like, there's plenty of fights up there if he really wants to challenge himself, and there's plenty of guys who'd be willing to open to take him out, you know?
He's only 30, though.
Yeah.
So he's got age on his side as well.
But he's getting into that phase of his career where he wants to probably cash some checks. You know, he's kind of proved his mettle, and it's time to go around banging the drum for him like they did with Golovkin. Golovkin built up a similar resume, getting into his 30s, and then started cashing the checks as he got in.
Yeah.
But as you mentioned there, round 10 was probably one of the trickiest rounds he's had to navigate in his whole career. That's saying something, you know, relatively speaking. Pedraza switching stances might be something opponents might look at in future. We spoke with Anthony Crawler there, and him and Joe haven't sat down quite yet to work out a game plan, but it's slim pickings in terms of chinks in the armour for Lomachenko, isn't it?
That's it. It's like, you can imagine sitting down and you'd almost have to rewind the tape, going, oh, there it is. There's the...
Where is it?
There it is, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's how you get him. Like, it's...
Maybe he'll tire himself out.
Yeah,
no, hit me in the face.
He's just, like, as I said earlier, just to go from the 10th round where, you know, it was a challenge for him to what he did in the 11th
round. One of the best rounds I've ever seen, probably.
Yeah.
Definitely one of his best ever.
Yeah, it was incredible. And that's what people want to see. That's what we expect, I suppose, because he set the bar so high that we think that we're going to get that for, not for 12 rounds, because it's not going to go 12 rounds usually if he's on song like that, but that's what we expect when we see Lomachenko now, that we're going to get that high technical class and the opponents won't be able to deal with it, and they'll either get stopped or they'll just won't come out for the bell and they'll just say, oh, I've had enough.
Yeah, but it's just remarkable to produce that sort of vibrance and punch selection and pressure in the 11th round of a fight, which wasn't going entirely his own way. He was just, I've never seen anything like him, frankly, but it's going to be difficult to match him now going forward. I know Mikey Garcia is who he called out after the fight, but Mikey's obviously tied up in the Errol Spence sweepstakes, up a couple of weights, so it could be a while before we see that one, if ever.
Mikey Garcia could get damaged in that fight, that he might never be the same.
And it's 12 pounds away, like, he's going to have to make that cut back down, so it's just... That might be another one of those fights that gets away, which...
Or if we see it, it's too late.
Yeah. And Gervonta Davis, who did a number on Pedraza last year, and Gervonta Davis has had some out-of-ring issues, so possibly out of commission for a little while, but that could be a competitive fight. Gervonta Davis has a style that could possibly trouble Lomachenko, but a point I would make is that, and we've spoken about it before, the only thing that's going to beat Lomachenko is ambition, you know, cycling up the weight divisions and possibly getting outdone by size, but he actually looks like quite a small lightweight. And
yeah, he did, yeah.
We saw that especially against Linares, who still probably the fight of the year, or one of. Linares is a big unit, and Lomachenko took some damage in that fight and suffered a significant injury, which made it all the more remarkable that he came back this early. But I don't want him to get too brave for his own good. You know, when you've got... I enjoy just watching him fight,
yeah.
You know, good opposition. He doesn't need to be doing any freak show stuff, and weight divisions are there for a reason, and I'm happy enough for him to clean up at lightweight or go back down to super feather. There's no need to be jumping up to doing a Mikey Garcia and jumping up and putting yourself in
harm's way. And if, like, watching him at the weekend and people saying that wasn't one of his better performances yet, that 11th round he still produced that, so we're
against
still,
the 2-weight world champion.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, I'm quite happy if he doesn't want to go all the way up the weights and really, like, he's challenging himself as it is. I mean, many amateur fights, or sorry, professional fights have been for world titles.
Yeah.
So, you know, he doesn't back down from challenges. But I can see what you mean, though, that he might just bite, just go for one too many.
Yeah, and Simon reeled off a couple of lightweights there, or a couple of light welterweights who, you know, good fighters, but not necessarily marquee names that are going to bring the cash money in, you know, so it's not really, risk versus reward doesn't really tally up quite yet. If there was a Manny Pacquiao of earlier years at 140, by all means, maybe go for it, but we'll see what happens there. He might be too good for his own good, another top-ranked fighter who might be in a similar boat as Terence Crawford, but seems like he's trying to throw a spanner in the works of the Amir Khan-Kell Brook dynamic there, and Kell Brook was in action at the weekend, and it seemed like it might have been playing on his mind a little bit, the uncertainty. He just didn't seem himself at all.
No, I've always believed, I don't know if you lads agree, but Brook needs the Khan fight more than Khan needs it. And he did it even after the fight. You know, he referenced, I'll come down to welterweight. And he weighed in at 150. Mm. So he was even underweight, like by 4 pounds, which is quite a lot. So what's he trying to do there? Is he trying to prove to Amir Khan, yeah, I can make it and I can do the rehydration and I'll be all right. But then he goes in and he just looks so laboured against Zarafa, who's not, you know, an elite fighter. But motivation as well. I mean, I'm wondering, is Kell Brook thinking, okay, I've got, you know, I fought Triple G, I fought Errol Spence, I just want one more payday to go, and it's Amir Khan. And if I go out and beat Khan, I can retire happy, and I beat Porter, I won a world title, and that's my career. And if he doesn't get it, is he just going to be put into fights where he just doesn't have the heart for it?
Yeah, and the token line is, take each fight as it comes, don't overlook your opponent. But the very notion that he weighed in at 150 was a clear pointer that he was thinking about the Amir Khan fight and trying to prove a point, which is a fool's errand, really. Like you mentioned last week, Simon, that Zarafa is no pushover. He's a decent unit, and he's gonna stand there until he's put away. And it's so approved, you know, he was no pushover over the weekend.
No, like, he kind of blocks punches with his head at the best of times. But, you know, Brook, if he was trying to make a point of weighing out at 150, he didn't make the point, because the point would have been to go to 147. That would have made a point. You know that I can fight at 147. Here's what I can do. He looked very laboured. He looked weak. Weaker, I should say. Not calling him weak would be wrong. He looked weaker than usual. He didn't look as crisp as he normally would. He should have thoroughly outclassed Zarafa. I don't think he did. I think he won maybe, I don't know, three or four rounds, but it wasn't a clear-cut win. He got hit, he got tagged an awful lot. I mean, the left hook was there from all night long, and he barely threw it, and when he did throw it, he landed. And you'd have to wonder, like Phil said, is the motivation there for fighting people who aren't Amir Khan? And I'd have to agree, I don't think it is. And Khan is now kind of boring him into submission, really, you know?
Yeah.
And Khan can take this Crawford fight, lose it, and then the Brook fight is still there. From what does Brook do?
It's true, and while I watched it, I thought this is quite sad, and I was kind of writing the obituary for Kell Brook's career a little bit. But on reflection, maybe it's slightly hasty to do it, because he was impressive against Rabchenko earlier in the year, and there might have been a couple of mitigating circumstances, like it's his last show ever in Sheffield, and it's a theme of this show so far. New trainer as well, and he was 50-1 on basically with the bookies. So unless you blow him away in one round, everyone's going to be sort of underwhelmed by your showing. So he's probably thinking in the back of his mind, you know, I can't really win here unless I do something utterly spectacular. So I might cut him the benefit of the doubt. But in a fight which last week I probably thought Brook was a heavy favourite against Amir Khan, I'm not so sure anymore.
That's what it's done. It's changed, because after the Vargas and Khan fight, we thought, geez, Kell Brook will go to town on Amir Khan, and now it's flipped. But the sad thing is, if it does happen in 2019, it's lost a bit of its appeal.
Mm. Well, it's gone from a stadium fight to
like, it'll probably be in the Manchester Arena. Yeah. You know, up that their boat. Like, I know you've got someone from Bolton and someone from Sheffield, so like Manchester would seem like a good venue for it. But yeah, whereas a few years ago it could have been a stadium fight.
And like, it's still going to be a good fight, because they're still at a similar level, albeit on the downslide. But what was once two of the top five welterweights on the planet is now sort of
two welterweights on the planet.
It's like a retirement gig for two.
Yeah.
I don't want to call them has-beens, because it's disrespectful. They're two elite world champions in their own right. But
this is the first time I have given Khan a chance in this fight after seeing that performance at the weekend. That's how underwhelmed I was by the performance.
But Kell Brook would love that. He'd love to be the underdog. Kind of, like, you can see how they're going to sell it if it happens anyway. You know, after years of saying no, like, Kell Brook and Amir Khan is going to happen. Because it's all seems to be, like, as I said, Kell Brook needs Khan more than Khan needs Brook. So do you blame Khan for, like, why wouldn't he fight Terence Crawford, who probably doesn't, he probably thinks to himself, I could go 12 rounds with Terence Crawford. He's not known for dynamite power.
Yeah. No, it's certainly not a reckless endeavour for Khan to fight Crawford. Crawford having come up from lightweight himself. You know, it's not as if he's, it's no comparison to the Canelo fight a couple of years ago where he basically just, that was as clear a swerve of Kell Brook as you're going to get. But it's going to be interesting to see where Brook goes from here, because he's basically mandatory for Jarrod Hurd now, who's the man at 154. And it's one of those, it would be a shot to nothing for Kell Brook in that fight, in the sense that Hurd would be a massive favourite, and anything positive Kell does in that fight would be, you know, even if he doesn't win, if he puts in a good showing, he wouldn't lose as much face as, say, losing to another welterweight or losing a below-par performance. So if he doesn't take the Amir Khan fight, or if the Amir Khan fight doesn't materialise, maybe the Hurd fight is the best. Just take your shot, shoot your shot and see what happens.
But what happens if he gets badly beaten by Hurd and then he might be thinking that could damage my chances against Amir Khan if that fight happens in the future, because, you know, he took a pacing against Golovkin. He got damaged badly against Errol Spence Jr. as well. So, you know, another defeat, not only what it would do for him mentally and physically as well. Because I wonder, is he just thinking, all I just want that Amir Khan fight, and I'm going to beat him, and then I'm going to retire, and then I can retire happy. And I don't want any other fights. I just got that impression looking at him the other night. He just...
Yeah.
And also, look, Andy has talked about it before when he changed trainers. Like, it was very strange watching it with Dominic Ingle in the crowd. And you wonder what kind of stuff that they've been working on. And maybe it's just they're at that transitional period where there is going to be change. But yeah, it wasn't a very impressive performance at all.
No, and John Fuchs, who was in the corner, like, we put a lot of stock in the Ben Davison angle of the Tyson Fury comeback, and that actually worked out to be quite a good partnership. And but there were instances, and you could pick it up on the Sky cameras, where Fuchs was telling Kell Brook to do something and he just wasn't doing it. So I don't know if there's sort of a buddy relationship there, or if he can actually take orders from someone who's basically debuting as a cornerman.
Do you know what I was thinking then? I was thinking of the time we had Paddy Collins in here with us, and he said sometimes you're talking to your fighter and they're looking past you. It's like they're looking through you because it's just not going in. And I was wondering, was that what was happening with Kell Brook, where his head just wasn't in that fight? He was going to survive, he was going to win it, but John Fuchs was telling him what to do, but he was just in his head going, like, I'll be fine, I know what to do.
Exactly, and whatever about the relationship with Dominic Ingle might be on the tetchy side with Kell Brook at this stage, but there's definitely respect there, and if Dom tells him to do something, he's going to do it, or he's going to go out there and try and prove him wrong. Do you know, he's that dynamic, whereas I'm not sure with the new trainer that's quite there yet, you know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how it all works out, like, if we do get that fight.
Yeah.
You kind of feel it has to happen in 2019, though.
I'm getting bored of it now if it doesn't happen.
If it doesn't happen next, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I think that's, like, if I was Amir Khan at the stage, when I see my rival going demented at the thought of not fighting me, he probably, just to, you know, annoy him, he might just not do it.
That's why, like, Kell Brook shouldn't have said anything about Khan after the fight.
Yeah.
Like, Khan is just going to keep winding him up.
Yeah. No, it's getting kind of sad at this stage. So either it happens or just draw a line under it, I think, for as far as Kell Brook is concerned.
I'd say we give it 6 months and don't mention it ever again.
What?
Exactly.
We'll stick by that on the show anyway. But do you remember the Ringside episode a couple of years ago where Kell and Amir were in the studio together? It gets some replay on Sky the odd time, but it's absolutely classic. Like, you could see that being tread out again if the thing actually does come to pass. But
that's an easy problem to make. But that's it. We won't talk about it again from now on.
One man who was on the undercard was our own John O'Carroll, who came somewhat unstuck against Francois on the undercard. It did strike me that he might have been slightly overawed by the occasion. He knew the platform he was on and how big a chance this was for him. it was basically, it was chief support given that Josh Kelly fell off the card. So he'll be disappointed with his showing. You know, it was a winnable fight and he just didn't do himself his best service, I thought.
What do you think of the decision?
I thought Frenois probably nicked it, but a draw is a perfectly fair result. Like, it's subjective. Frenois is limited, not as skillful as Jono, but he was consistent, landing the crisp, eye-catching shots. And for that reason, he probably edged it, but Andy scored a draw on the commentary, and yeah, it's probably fair.
Eddie Hearn said after he gave it to Frenois, do you think Carroll was lucky not to get a point taken off him for that blow after the 10th round? The bell had gone.
Yeah, it's like, it's kind of one you're not going to, unless you do it more than once, yeah, it's, you're unlikely to get a point straight away. But he just seemed sort of, he was tetchy from the start, and it was going his own way in the first third of the fight, and then started to swing in Fuenua's favour, and Jono never really arrested control back. And there's talk he might have had a virus going into the fight, but I just think he got dragged into a war that he didn't necessarily need to have. If he had stuck to his boxing at range.
I don't think he got dragged into it. I think he wanted it. I think he tried to walk him down. He knew your man had kind of powder puff punches. I think he'd only knocked 12 of 40-something people out of his wins. And I think he thought, I'll wear this guy down. And it just didn't happen. Maybe he just thought he was stronger than he was, or your man was weaker than he was. So yeah, tactically, I think he got it totally wrong.
He said that after as well. He said he was better than I thought he was going to be. But that's all well and good. But if you realise that in the ring, that this guy is better than I thought he was going to be, you have to readjust to that. And look, the beauty of it is he didn't lose, so he learned from that. That, you know, if I'm in a fight again and there's a guy that I'm fighting and I'm thinking, this guy isn't what I thought it was going to be like, you have to be able to readjust. I wonder, is all the back and forward of Tevin Farmer, like, post.
It's entertaining.
It is entertaining, but I wonder, was that in his head as well? I was like, I'm going to show Tevin Farmer I mean business, I'm going to win this fight, and then I'm coming for Tevin Farmer. But yeah, Tevin Farmer posted a video laughing at him, basically, just saying, is that the best you got?
You'd have to back Farmer to win that fight, based on what we've seen.
Yeah, like, there was probably an element of that. But I did think Jono played the part quite well, even in the press conference and stuff. You can see why Eddie Hearn has taken such a shine to him, because yeah, he's very marketable and he's got the sort of the Irish charm, and he talks a good game, and he dresses well. Like, they all count in terms, yeah, of bringing him to the
beard.
American market.
It is super weird. Yes. Yeah.
Like, there could be something in that beard. Like, you could put a concrete block in that beard. It's so big.
Yeah, it's actually very recent that they've stopped outlawing that. You used to have to shave those off, but they've since come to realise that it's actually not that much of an advantage. You know, it's not going to stop Deontay Wilder knocking yet, for example. But yeah, a lot of jawing with Tevin Farmer, as we mentioned there, and I was obviously a big proponent for getting the mandatory position, you know, all the benefits that come with that. He's obviously lost that now. There's potential that a rematch could occur and he could win that again. But Eddie Hearn's saying we might just press ahead with Jono for March, probably St. Patrick's weekend in Philadelphia, which would be a great occasion. You can imagine the Irish turnout over there. So that looks likely for Jono. I think Simon already mentioned he heavily favoured Tevin in that fight, but would you see, if Jono makes the correct adjustments, do you think he can cause Farmer some trouble?
No. Not on the basis of what we saw at the weekend. I mean, Farmer's a far better opponent than the French lad. Whose name?
Frenois.
Yeah, like, name escapes me.
Again, though, Farmer's not powerful either.
No, he's not, but I mean, he stopped Tennyson in the last fight with some pretty brutal body shots. I don't think he'll stop Carroll. I just think he'll outclass him based on what we've seen. Now, if Carroll had a virus or wasn't well, that changes things completely, you know. But it's definitely a fight I want to see. I don't want to see a rematch with Frenois anytime.
It's a good fight, though. Like,
yeah, but every time somebody I don't want to see a rematch all the time. Like, yeah. I think Eddie Hearn's right, press on and do something else. I mean, they can revisit that again. I just don't think straight away, you know.
Yeah.
I think Carroll would win that rematch. I think
definitely.
So.
It was a good clash in the sense that when southpaws fight each other, it's generally a bit cagey because they're not used to fighting southpaws either. Yeah. Whereas in this, they kind of got stuck into each other, and it was probably the best fight on the card. Actually, it was definitely the best fight in the card. It wasn't Sky Sports' best offering, let's just say that. So if that Philly weekend does happen in March, Katie Taylor, like,
you go to it, will you?
I'll be there.
If you go, you have to have a Philly cheesesteak.
I'll definitely be there.
I spent a summer there. There's a place I can recommend. It's very good.
Oh, Phil, you've been everywhere in America.
Not to see boxing, unfortunately, though.
Oh, listen, we'll have to sort that out in 2019.
You're the globetrotter.
We'll have to sort that out next year now. Katie Taylor could well be there in March, so it all depends on her fight this weekend. She returns on the big stage in Madison Square Garden. She's fairly taken off the bucket list, isn't she, Simon?
Bucket list aside, this will probably be her toughest fight in boxing, I think.
Yeah.
Ever in her career. Wahlström is... She's had 200 fights as an amateur. She's undefeated in 23 professional fights. She turned pro in 2010. She moves very similar to Katie. She's very light in her feet, very smart. For anyone who doesn't know anything about her, like myself until last night, Transworld Sport, funnily enough, did a feature on her. It's on YouTube as of last month, just before the fight was announced. And the scary thing about her is she's twice had two injuries or illnesses, which meant she had to stop boxing, and they said, look, your career is probably finished. So she twice had to deal with, I'm never going to box again. And it's a second chance and a third chance. I think that makes her one of the most dangerous fighters Katie's going to face, because it was all gone, then it was back. It's all gone, it's back, and it's all... And now she has a chance to take on the biggest star in women's boxing on the world's biggest stage. This isn't just a fight that was thrown... It was thrown together in a month, but it isn't a fight...
She had a training camp.
It isn't a fight that was thrown... Yeah, they actually lined her up with a Kazakh fighter until this opportunity came up. And just even in that documentary, she said, you know, I'd like to meet the toughest boxer. Boxers, I don't care about titles. I don't care about winning or losing. I want to have those really, really tough fights, and then I can leave boxing behind me. And that was before she was announced to fight Katie. And she's very articulate and smart and funny as well. I actually could see the two of them being friends after this, but I could see them fighting two or three times. This is going to be a very, very difficult fight for Katie.
Yeah, stiff test, definitely. And I think Brian Peters put out a tweet last week just detailing the opponents Katie's fought in recently and pointing out that they've all moved up and won world titles. So it's one of the most irksome things in boxing, personally, that people say Katie's not fighting anybody, because she's fighting top-class opposition, and she's just, on most occasions, she's getting above them. But on this occasion, it probably will be her trickiest fight to navigate, Phil, I'd say.
So what happens if she goes out at the weekend and absolutely destroys Wahlström?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And then people go, you know, she's not fighting top quality. Like, you know,
she's Simon's the best available.
Yeah, Simon's just alluded to it there. Like, you know, that all the amateur fights, I know they met in the amateur ranks and Katie beat her. But who didn't she beat in amateur boxing? She's stepping up, though.
Yeah.
Stepping up in weight. Is that going to be an issue? Like, you kind of wonder what Katie's record, like her perfect record, but she probably hasn't got as many finishes as maybe I thought she might in the pro ranks. But she doesn't go looking for knockouts.
No. It's something we've touched on earlier, that she relies on fighters coming towards her and she knocks them out with counter punches. So if, for example, Serrano in the last fight
just ran for that
in retreat, it's just not going to happen. Yeah.
Well, she's going to get the fight she wanted the last time out this time. This is going to be a very exciting fight. And I'm not just saying that because it's Katie Taylor. She's going to get the scrap she wanted last time out, guaranteed.
Simon's giving it the big sell.
I tell you, we haven't even got on to the main event on that card.
Are you excited?
Yeah, no, like December, it's brilliant. I'm usually off early in the week, and I have all these fights recorded. It's just great to sit down and watch them all, and there's more to come.
Yeah.
We're 2 weekends of this now. Obviously, we had last weekend as well. Like, there's just really good fights coming up. Like, and Andy has obviously pointed out why, like, fighters want to get paid before Christmas, and they want to make sure they don't have to train over Christmas. So December is always a good month for boxing.
Yeah, and it's a great showcase for female boxing, as we said there. And last weekend, Cecilia Brækus and Clarissa Shields headlined the last ever show on HBO, which is quite hard to believe. As Phil alluded to, DAZN have since acquired Canelo Alvarez, and he's going to headline that show. It's kind of their breakout party in the American market. He takes on Rocky Fielding. Probably, we alluded to it with Pedraza, but I can't remember a champion going into a fight as such an underdog. Would you give Rocky any realistic chance in this, do you think?
Like, even with a name like Rocky, and you'd be thinking, can he emulate the great Rocky Balboa, who's obviously not a real character? But to beat Canelo, like, you have to knock him out, because you're not going to beat him on the scorecards. So I'd love to know what Rocky Fielding is deep down, what he's thinking going into this fight. Like, okay, I've heard him talking about when his trainer, Jamie Moore, rang him to say, Canelo wants to fight you. Like, that's an amazing call to get. Like, he's won a world title and he's thinking, like, this is what I got into boxing for. And then he gets a call to say, Canelo wants to fight you. And you don't have to come down and wait. They're going to fight you 12 stone. You just keep doing what you're doing and you're going over to New York to fight, like, before Christmas. This is unbelievable. But what is it like for a boxer going in where they must know that they can't win? Like, you can tell them all, if you're Jamie Moore, you can say, yeah, you've got what it takes to beat this guy, but I just wonder, does he genuinely believe that he can win?
Yeah, and I'd say underestimation on Canelo's part is probably Rocky's best chance in this fight. Like, I remember at the face-off, Rocky actually opened the New York Stock Exchange, just an absolutely bizarre state of affairs, but there were still marks on Canelo's face from the Golovkin fight, and people probably, like, enough time has passed that people forget what a war that was, and there was so much contention around the result that it was a properly brutal scrap. Like, it's probably a bit early for Canelo to be jumping back into the ring, and while Rocky is a huge underdog, he's a big unit and big puncher, so Canelo underestimating him, that whole flux of factors where he might be overlooking him even, that's probably Rocky's best chance, Simon, would you say?
It's his best chance, but it's not going to happen, unfortunately. I just can't see it. I can't see the underdog dream coming through here.
It'll probably go a fair distance, though. I don't think it'll be an early...
Yeah. It's a hard... Actually, you know that you can visualise certain fights, how they're going to play.
This is one that we never saw coming.
No, like, I was saying to Simon off air, possibly Pacquiao and Margarito, where Rocky's throwing big punches and Canelo's just slipping combinations in between, and it might turn out like that, but...
Yeah.
I think something freaky might just happen in this fight because it's so out there that
if he was to win,
even if he gives him a scare, that would be value enough for Rocky Fielding, I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, he's won a world title. He's already won.
Yeah.
I mean, he's achieved.
Like, if you'd have told him when Callum Smith cleaned him out in his hometown in one round, that he'd go on and win a version of the world title and then fight the face of the sport.
Yeah, he was 100% dead right to take the fight.
Absolutely.
Absolutely no problem with it.
Yeah.
But I'm just, you're also a bit worried, given the disparity in skill and possibly even punch power. And I know Canelo's a bit smaller, but...
Canelo hasn't really hurt anyone at middleweight, though. And this is a big jump up for him. He was dominant at 154, but this is a full stone up. Yeah. And Rocky's a career super middle, more or less. So...
It sounds like you're starting to believe.
Yeah.
No, it's so out there.
He's convincing me anyway.
I know.
I remember scrolling through my Twitter and just seeing the fight was announced. I'm like, it wasn't even on the cards.
It wasn't on the wish list for 2018.
No, didn't see it coming. But Jamie Moore's a busy man. He's obviously going to be in the corner on Saturday night and has Frampton the week after.
Yeah, I wonder how that works.
Difficult balancing act.
Like, he's going to be at both fights, but he has to split his time. But I wonder if you're... Like, as the boxer, where you're thinking he should be here with me.
I don't think Frampton would be too crazy about that. Like, this is a key home stretch in his preparation and his chief.
You're talking about 3 or 4 days without him.
Yeah. Like, Jamie Moore's trainer of the year. Like, this is a big part of Frampton's arsenal that's not going to be there for the next few days. So, hopefully, he's got his game plan steadfast at this stage because time's ticking and that fight, it's coming around the corner pretty quick. As I mentioned, that's a real. It's a coming out party for DAZN. They had Anthony Joshua, obviously, against Povetkin, but they're really attacking the American market with Canelo now, and it's a real passing of the torch given that HBO signed off. And we spoke about this when the announcement was first made a couple of months ago, but this is it now, nail in the coffin time for HBO. And I tweeted out Jim Lampley's final remarks as he signed off the final broadcast, and the overwhelming response I was getting was people from America saying, this brings me back to my childhood, you know, or spending time with my friends and family. We'd get everyone around and watch the fights, and Jim Lampley's a part of my childhood, Emmanuel Stewart and whatnot. And it's something Phil's brought up a lot, and we all have experience of getting the friends around and buying the fight. And it's just a huge part of American culture. It's just been ripped out, and people who aren't necessarily boxing fans have a real growth for HBO. It's pretty sad to see them go, isn't it?
Yeah, because if you've got a voice that you're so familiar with, we have it in all sports, and then they're gone. Like, it does, it's strange. I mean, it's different for us here because sometimes we're watching these fights, we're getting, say, like BT commentary or Sky commentary. But there is often events where they just take the feed from HBO or Showtime, whoever is showing it. But yeah, it'll be, so, like, HBO is, like, if you're a boxing fan, you grew up with it, like, so. Like, I'm sure they're going to do something in the future.
Yeah.
But I just wonder, like, will they have to, like, will it take change? Like, when there's change in HBO, will somebody come in and say, do you know how I'll get us back? I'll start getting boxing in again. But, like, as boxing fans, we're still going to see boxing, but yeah, just not to hear him.
Yeah, sad. 44 years on air, you know, it's really the end of an era. And Peter Nelson, who's public enemy number one for pulling the plug here, but like, he was a boxing journalist before he became an executive, and he's the last person who'd want to do this, make this decision. But obviously the subscriber base in HBO, it's not being dictated to the way boxing used to do it. You know, it used to sign up for Sugar Ray Leonard and whatnot, but that's just not the case anymore. But it's not. It doesn't suggest that boxing's on the way down. It's very much the opposite. It's because there's so much investment from other platforms that HBO just aren't willing to match it. And it's since come to pass that they had to pull out at this stage. But
yeah, just it's the redistribution of rights. And I mean, you could say not the writing was on the wall, but when Mayweather went to Showtime,
yeah,
and he actually went back to HBO and said, "This is what they're offering me," and HBO said, "No, you're grand. knock yourself out." And that, I don't know if that was the beginning of the end, but it was definitely a sea change in the boxing landscape.
Yeah, it's something like, it's such a busy time in boxing, but maybe next year we might get into the whole idea of TV rights in America. It's fascinating that Showtime and HBO, who are competitors, one of them is going like right behind boxing and one of them saying, no, not for me. So, you know, that two competitors can have such divergent opinions is very interesting. And obviously Fox, who are our main broadcaster in America, ESPN, you know, DAZN, you know, there's so many platforms now, and it's just it's a changing landscape that hasn't changed in a long time. So it's going to make for interesting times. But just quickly before we wrap up, we might just get your favourite memory, Simon, from watching HBO, legally or illegally, over the years.
I had two, but now I've got three after I think about it. So my favourite fight, possibly of all time, is Pacquiao Marquez 2. I just think it had everything. And like, the counter puncher, the attack, aggressive southpaw. It was probably six rounds apiece with a knockdown being the deciding score. You can watch that fight over and over again. I think the two boys were in their prime and they just went at it. Obviously, I didn't see it live, but Gaddy Ward won, you know, and especially when you see Jim Lampley talk about it and he starts crying. He goes, "What's your favourite?" "Gaddy Ward won round 9. Yeah. And he breaks down and you start breaking down for whatever reason. That was that set off, obviously, the trilogy between the two of them. And then I suppose the biggest one of all would be Mayweather De La Hoya. I think that was an excellent fight as well. And De La Hoya just ran out of gas, you know, the last two or three rounds when he had him really on the ropes. And Mayweather squeaked through. And there was a reason why he didn't give De La Hoya the immediate rematch. You know, because that game plan was there. Freddie Roach had got it right. And De La Hoya just ran out of gas and wasn't able to pull it off.
Yeah, and Mayweather De La Hoya was the birth of the 24/7 series, which has now been spawned in so many different directions by the UFC. Of kind of mimicked the format, so that in itself is a staying power for the HBO brand. Anything stick out in your mind, Phil?
Yeah, like Gaddy Ward is always going to be at the top, like round 9. I can remember the Mayweather De La Hoya fight. I remember a load of us watched it together and we all sat there and we scored it, and like there was a divide in the room and who won. But see, that was around the time where like people love to see the undefeated fighter being beaten, and I think the night we were watching, there was a lot of lads in the room that really just wanted to see Mayweather beaten, and so they were scoring it for De La Hoya. But I think they got it right when they gave it to Mayweather. And Mayweather and Larry Merchant, I enjoyed that one. The Victor Ortiz,
yeah,
the post fight interview where Larry Merchant basically put Mayweather back in his box and said, you know, if it wasn't so old, I'd give you.
I was 40 years younger, I'd kick your ass. Yeah.
But what's really sparked my interest in boxing was the De La Hoya Mayweather fight, which I stayed up for at the time, and then the Hatton Mayweather fight came right on the heels of that, and I was just totally enraptured by that fight. Like, it just it captured my imagination, the whole undefeated versus undefeated, and as a child I was just like, this is unbelievable, do you know? So
say the line.
That's one of the first fights I bought with my own pocket money, so like, it's kind of it brings back memories for me. And then my first ever memory in boxing is when my dad bought Naz against Wayne McCullough, which is
Halloween
20 years ago now.
Yeah.
And like I was a babby at the time, but I remember everyone coming around to watch it, and even then like HBO got right behind Naz, and I remember Larry Merchant, if you watch the fight back or watch the fights back now, he can't get his head around this. Who is this guy? Yeah. Like, what is this
like
character?
His entrance,
it's like a cartoon character.
Yeah,
it's like,
remember his entrance?
He came down the flying carpet, was it?
He
came out the graveyard.
Yeah, he's punching like
he came out to the Thriller theme tune instead. Yeah.
Brilliant.
He's like punching these dummies like hell.
I have to look that up.
Yeah, and in fair, like that was a great fight, and Nassim won that fight, but I think McCullough came out with so much credit because he just had an iron chin. And he took some of Nassim's best shots and not a bother on him.
Yeah. That was class. Like, there's just copious amounts of HBO material online, fights, classic fights, and that's just one of them. All the Naz fights, anything from the 90s, really. It's HBO's your port of call. So hopefully they will come back at some point in the future. And if not, we'll try and do some sort of nostalgia trip, or we'll keep them alive one way or another, you know?
I just want to go out now and just go onto YouTube and start watching these. And
might just do that, Phil.
That'll be another day gone.
Yeah. So yeah, the plates are forever shifting, so boxing's changing, and we'll see where it goes. But that's our lot for today. Another packed show next week. We'll be looking back at events in MSG. There'll also be plenty of chat ahead of Warrington versus Frampton and White versus Chisora. Have we seen all the promos for that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Which one are you going to be buying, Phil?
I will be going for Warrington and Frampton. And obviously, I'll probably, maybe even later that night, I can watch back the Chisora and White fight.
Great weekend for fight fans, Simon. We're looking forward to that one.
Oh, yes, indeed we are.
Which one would you go for?
Frampton Warrington.
Yeah, I think most people would go Frampton Warrington, wouldn't they?
I'd say so.
I think we're going to see White Chisora 2 be exactly the same as White Chisora 1, which isn't a bad thing.
No.
But we don't know how Frampton Warrington's going
to
go.
That'd be a great thing. So we'll build up to both of those fights next week. We're not picking favourites, but we'll watch both of them, and Andy Lee will be in to preview those two. Until then, though, it's good luck from us.